Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Carol, I meant to ask you, are you watching or have you watched any of the new American Idol yet?
No, I checked out.
We used to talk about American Idol
years ago,
right?
Years ago, I checked out.
And I think a lot of people checked out. Well, here's what happened. So I think it debuted the Sunday when I left for vacation that previous Friday. So I had it in the DVR. So we get home this past Sunday. And I tend to watch The Voice a little bit, although there's so many darn episodes that I watched last night.
You know,
they're in the battle rounds. It's just hard to watch it all. But it's kind of one of those shows that you can have on in the background when you're doing some work or something like that.
Right.
You don't need to focus. So because I was a longtime American Idol fan from years ago. I think much of the country was. I mean, for
a while
it was a cultural phenomenon.
Absolutely.
I thought, well, I'm gonna check it out and see what it's like. And now I only watched the first episode. But I thought
you've watched thus far?
Well, that's all I've watched. Because you know, I got home on Sunday or Saturday and then I had it in the DVR. So I think there's just two episodes, right? Last Sunday.
I think
Unless they ran.
Did you see the St. Louis one yet?
I think the St. Louis is in The Voice.
Oh, in The Voice, that's right.
And I did see
this
her.
Is not good that I'm confusing these.
Right. But the thing that really stuck out to me is the judges were so awkward. Like, it's Lionel Richie, Katy Perry.
Right.
And
that's already weird.
Luke Bryan. And the chemistry doesn't work. One of the reasons I think that the original judges worked, because Simon was a jerk, right? And he was willing. Here's what I think is missing. There needs to be a willingness on the part of the judges to say, man, you're just like bad and we're not going to put you through. I think there's, from what I saw in the first episode, they're grading on the curve to a certain extent. But my favorite part was, I wish I had some audio of this. There was one guy that got up there, he belted his heart out. He's doing a cover song. Most of them do cover songs.
Sure.
Not everybody. Some of them do originals. And that's kind of a gutsy thing. And Lionel Richie, and this guy could actually, he had a decent voice. I don't know that I would have put him through, but a lot of people don't put through. He's like, we don't know who you are. I don't know who you are as an artist. To which I would have responded, hey, Lionel, I just did 2 minutes of a freaking cover song, dude. How in the hell would you know who I am as an artist?
I've come to understand. I remember when that began to be floated as a critique, that you need to have a brand, if you will. I think that's what it means. And at first I thought, well, how would you know who the artist is? I know how you sing. I know if you're bluesy or folksy, or if you're rough around the edges and the voice grovelly. I know those kinds of things, but I don't know who you are. That's a weird.
It's like who you are, who you want to be. Well, how am I supposed to tell you that in a 2 minute audition? Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I probably shouldn't watch these stupid reality shows, but every once in a while I sample. And the thing that I always say is, do you think, you know, you think about this in terms, and I think that a lot of musicians are put off by this for a variety of reasons, because it is a quick path to success, perhaps without paying dues. Although you have exceptions, like look at Carrie Underwood. I mean, she gets plucked out of, where was it, Iowa? And hometown farm girl.
But
a true
talent.
And one of the biggest stars in all of music, right?
You know, I feel this, Mark, when it comes to even our industry. You know, someone can be an actor or a politician or someone who's made a complete fool of themselves publicly, and then next thing you know, they have a talk show.
That's what happened to me. How do you think I got here? I know what you mean.
People don't have degrees. They have not come up through the ranks. They've not paid dues. Some people have not paid dues. And it can be, I understand that from musicians who say, I've worked the circuit. I have paid dues, and other people have not necessarily done that. Although I will add that when you watch these shows and you hear some of the individual stories, people are saying that I've been singing at, you know, whatever, for years. Some have paid some dues.
The dirty little secret on The Voice in particular is that many of those artists, if you see the little stories that they play, they are professional singers.
Yeah,
there's a woman, and I don't think it's a woman from St. Louis, but there's a woman who was on The Voice a couple of nights ago, great voice, just really belts it out. And she has been, and I think even is currently, a background singer for Jennifer Hudson. So it's like the 20 Feet. I don't know if you saw 20 Feet from Stardom, which was a great documentary about these background singers that are just alongside some of the greatest performers on earth, including Bruce Springsteen. And they're not the stars. They're just, they've always been there sort of in the background, not having the focus on them. Do they have enough talent to be the stars? Well, maybe they do. And I think that's what they're trying to figure out. But
they
my point was going
to be
if
they're pros.
But listen, so if we were on, let's say Dave Klein and you and me are on The Voice right now, right? And we have our chairs turned in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who don't know, the one unique thing about The Voice is they can't see what the singers look like.
Blind audition.
Right? So you're not making any judgment except for about their voice, which I think is kind of cool.
I love that part of it.
And there are surprises because you'll turn your chair and say, wait, what is that? And that's like, that's a woman or that's a man or that's an old dude or that's a young dude.
Yeah, it looks like a computer geek and he's singing like, you know, James Taylor, right?
There's this girl on The Voice right now. She's 14 years old and she is super talented, really talented. But think about if we were on The Voice right now, we have our chairs turned in one direction and Mick Jagger starts singing, or Bruce Springsteen starts singing, or Eric Clapton starts singing, or, you know, Bono, even Bono. Let's put some of the biggest stars in all of music. There's no way, not one chair would turn. There's not one chair that would turn.
I could see that.
For, well, maybe for Bono. And it depends on what people, I'm just.
Of that list you just gave, that would be the least one. Well, Mick Jagger, I don't think. I think his image and the time.
I'm just saying.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. That the voices that we grew up with, if you will, are not the voices that would get a chair turned today.
But you can have a great voice, but that doesn't mean you're going to be a great
Because
performer.
Who are you as an artist?
Right. That would be my question. I don't know who you are, Carol, as a broadcaster. Yeah, I do get annoyed when, you know, you get these people out there like, lawyers come to mind. Yippy yappy lawyers, Jane Duker, who all of a sudden, did I say
Leave
that a lot?
Jane
who think
alone.
They can be on the radio and do a talk show. I don't like those people.
Hey,
anyway.
That she would be in that category. She would be in that category.
Right. All right, we'll hear from you 4 o'clock.
I'll be back. I'm going to go work away in the newsroom.
Mark Zuckerberg update here. We talked about Facebook in the last hour, and while we were doing that, he broke his silence on the Cambridge Analytica scandal, saying we have a responsibility to protect your data. If we can't do it, we don't deserve to serve you. He says that they're going to investigate all apps with access to Facebook data. They're going to restrict developers' data access even further to prevent other kinds of abuses, something I think they should have done years ago. They're going to launch a tool at the top of the news feed that will show users which apps have had access to their data and allow them to revoke those apps' permissions. You know, the other aspect of this that I was going to get into in the last hour, if I can find this piece here, is Matthew Iglesias, who I don't tend to agree with on most things, wrote a piece called The Case Against Facebook. It's not just about privacy. Its core function makes people lonely and sad. And I think part of what he says is true from this perspective. Now, I'm not all worked up about this data thing with Facebook. I'm really not. Because I think that if you want privacy, you shouldn't be on social media. And I don't think it's as big of a scandal as it's being made out to be. But that's just my personal opinion. And if you don't want Facebook, if you don't think Facebook is good for you, then get off Facebook. But he's basically saying a couple of things. One point he makes is that it's destroying journalism. And that's an issue. And I do think there is something to that with the amount of fake news that gets put out on Facebook, both from so-called official channels and non-official channels.
You are fake news.
That's right. But the other part of it is, this is what he says, Facebook makes people depressed and lonely. A large and growing body of research confirms what probably ought to be obvious. Spending a lot of time alone, disengaged from other human beings, staring at your phone and clicking on little buttons on a platform obsessively engineered by some of the smartest people on the planet to keep you staring and clicking is not good for you. And there's a lot of angry people on Facebook, and I'm not particularly fond of politics on Facebook because I think there's better suited formats for that, including Twitter. So I don't do politics on Facebook. The main reason I do it is because I have friends all over the world, and they're able to kind of keep up with you and see what you're doing and see the family pictures and stuff like that. But here's what's amazing to me, and I'm sure that many of you have noticed this before, and I noticed it with Instagram too, that if someone presses like on your post or your picture, or on Instagram stories in particular, this has been an interesting little experiment. So Instagram stories is more like Snapchat. And I'm losing some people here. On Instagram, you can simply post pictures and they'll go in a newsfeed, not unlike Facebook. Dave, if I lose people here, will you tell me? So on Instagram stories, it's part of Instagram. It's at the top of the page, and you can post a picture and you can write a caption. You can draw things on it. You can put effects. They have something called Boomerang, which makes people, it's like a 2-second video that goes back and forth, and it's kind of funny. And you post that and it stays for 24 hours. So that's kind of like Snapchat. And if people are looking at your Instagram stories feed, you see their names listed. They don't have to press like or anything. It comes up. You can see the people that are looking at it. I found it fascinating once I started using Instagram stories. And by the way, if you want to follow, it's Mark Talk, MarkTalk. That's my handle on Instagram. That there are a lot of people out there who never press like on any of my pictures, but they're following my Instagram stories on a regular basis. So that tells me they're looking at my Instagram pictures. But my point of all this is, it's amazing how many important people or people who should be doing work during the day. I'm in Mexico last week and I posted some Instagram stuff and I'm looking at people that are on my stories or you know, pressing like on things and they're at work and they're supposed to be doing, and I'm telling you, these are like, some people have real jobs, not unlike me. I just yap on the radio. And the amount of, this is the next scandal, the amount of time that is spent on social media platforms when people are at work, when they maybe should be doing other things, is quite stunning. I just thought I'd toss that in there. We're going to talk about Illinois and what happened in the primaries yesterday and how expensive that race for governor in November is going to be next on KMOX.
News at the top of every hour. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
Final spring training game of the season on the air on KMOX, at least during the week. Dave, do we have any on the weekends, you know, or is that the last one? We might have one on the weekend, so I don't want to be, you know, full of this.
You are fake news.
That's right. We do have them on the weekends, but the final, yeah, I don't care about that. What I care about is my damn show right here getting interrupted, and the last time it will happen for the spring training portion of the season will be tomorrow. We got opening day from New York next week, so that will take a little time away from, but it's real baseball. At this point, I think we're ready for real games. So big election in Illinois yesterday, and Bruce Rauner comes out on top, although I think it was pretty close, and J.B. Pritzker was the Democrat winner. Now, I don't really follow Illinois politics perhaps as much or as closely as I should, and I'll just admit that right now, and I apologize to those of you who are disenfranchised from Cook County that live in the southern part of the state, but that's why we're bringing in an expert here this afternoon to talk about it from the Chicago Tribune. Political reporter Rick Pearson is with us. Hey, Rick, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
So I have several questions about this. I had the governor, I had Bruce Rauner on the show a couple of days ago. This race with Jeanne Ives, though, did it end up being a lot closer than anticipated?
Much closer than anybody anticipated, including the governor of the state of Illinois. I mean, when you come down to a victory of just a few percentage points in a primary contest, that shows a great deal of vulnerability here, and certainly an embarrassment going into what was already going to be, regardless, a very difficult general election contest.
Did she concede at this point? Because I know I saw some stuff this morning saying that she had not.
Yeah, she has conceded, but as far as we know, they have not talked to each other. And certainly in some of her comments this morning to some of her supporters, she says, "I really have nothing to talk to Bruce Rauner about."
Yeah, I didn't sense that they were on the Christmas card exchange list. got a little nasty.
They're not only not on the same page, they're not in the same library.
No, they're not. So J.B. Pritzker, you know, the only thing I know about him is this, and I want to get your reaction. This was an ad that ran nonstop here in St. Louis.
Okay, so, but what if, and I'm telling you, this could happen, because I know how Madigan is. He says, "I'll give you health care, give you a capital bill. Okay, I'll balance what works with you to balance the budget the way you want to do it. I raise taxes on people, and you make Lisa the senator." Okay,
mm-hmm.
That puts me in a moral dilemma.
All right, so that ad goes on. I'm not going to play the whole thing here, but that's J.B. Pritzker with Rod Blagojevich, and they're not talking about Rod's hair there, are they?
No, they're not. This was back to right after Barack Obama won the U.S. Senate seat. And there were conversations between Pritzker and Blagojevich, who had known each other for some time, about potential replacements for the U.S. Senate seat to replace Obama. And these were actually first tapes published by the Tribune. They were obtained by the government as part of the Blagojevich corruption trial, but were not played in court.
All right, so when I saw that ad, and it played a lot. I don't know how much it played up there in the Chicago area, but I thought, man, this guy's like dead in the water. How does he recover from that association? Lo and behold, he wins the Democrat primary and probably has a good chance to beat Bruce Rauner in November.
Well, but what you have seen throughout by Bruce Rauner running these ads is basically that is the playbook moving forward. It's trying to play guilt by association with Blagojevich, with Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. That is his playbook because while, you know, for the most part, elections are a referendum on a sitting governor, what really Rauner is trying to do is shift that and make it a referendum on the Democrats who have controlled the state prior to him taking over 4 years ago. And that's, you know, that's it's a Democratic-leaning state, and that's a tough kind of connect the dots for most people. So you do run these ads. You run them continuously. And, I mean, the ads basically have already started for the general election here.
And the focus of your piece this morning was how expensive, brutal, and long this campaign is going to be.
Yes. And, you know, you look at the fact Pritzker put in, he's an heir of the Hyatt Hotel fortune. He put in $70 million worth of his own money for the primary. Spent $33 million on TV ads. Bruce Rauner, back at the end of 2016, he's an equity investor. He put in $50 million. And he, the head of a hedge fund, who is an ally, put in $20 million. So there's another $70 right there. And Rauner spent tens of millions of dollars on ads in the primary trying to affect the Pritzker outcome. So you had both sides kind of playing in each other's sandbox going on. Now it's going to be direct head-to-head, and it's going to be much more brutal, and it's going to be much more expensive.
Do you think, you know, I heard from, after I had Bruce Rauner on the other day, the governor was with me on Tuesday, and, wait, Monday, I think. Yeah, Monday before the primary. I'm losing track of time. I apologize. But I've heard from several people in our area, farmers who were supporters of Bruce Rauner in the past that got really put off by some of the things that he's done. So has he alienated? You might have heard my reference to the disenfranchised part of the Illinois electorate outside of Cook County. In my listening area here, where a lot of the support for, in theory, Bruce Rauner has come from, has he alienated some of those people?
There is a lot of alienation all over the state. And I, just so you know, I went to school at SIU Edwardsville. So I'm familiar with Metro East and downstate. And one of the things that Ives was able to do was basically downstate in southern Illinois is less Democratic. It's always been conservative, but conservative may be Democratic. It's becoming less Democratic. It's becoming more Republican. And it's a more socially conservative Republican. And there were things that Ives, as a hard social conservative, that was the basis of her campaign, were issues involving abortion rights, immigration rights, transgender rights, things that Rauner had done after saying he had no social agenda. And that was the thrust of her campaign, was to try to generate enthusiasm among social conservatives who feel left out, who feel that they're regionally being left out, and in many respects, kind of some of the same touchstones that Donald Trump used in his campaign.
You know, can anybody, I don't care if you're J.B. Pritzker or Bruce Rauner, actually fix some of the issues in Illinois? It seems like one of those never-ending holes.
There is no easy way, and there's no quick way to do it. I mean, when you talk about a public employee pension debt that of over $130 billion, when you talk about the fact during that two-year budget stalemate where we racked up $16 billion worth of bills.
Oh, my God.
Where you're paying out $1 million in interest on overdue bills.
Yeah, where vendors still aren't getting paid for months and months and months.
Right. So, you know, this it's in need of a huge structural overhaul. And, you know, as the governor says, you can't just, you know, raise taxes. You got to grow the economy, and we know that Illinois' economy has been the slowest in the Midwest. But when you have this ideological divide between the governor and his pro-business agenda and Democrats who overwhelmingly control the legislature and their supporters and organized labor, you got to come down to the fact that it takes 30 votes to pass something in the Illinois Senate and 60 votes to pass something in the Illinois House. and people have been going at cross points, and there has to be some way to find the nexus so that things can pass and move the state forward.
What's the grand total expected for spending on this campaign, both personal contributions and otherwise?
Well, J.B. Pritzker is self-funding his campaign, so that $70 million came out of his pocket. He's worth $3.5 billion. He's indicated he'll spend what it takes. Record is around $280 million that was in a California race with Meg Whitman when she was just retired from Hewlett-Packard against Jerry Brown. It could get there. I'm not sure it can. I don't know if you can spend that much.
But it's, well, we'd like them to spend a little bit of it here in Missouri on Camel X.
Well, absolutely.
And at the Chicago Tribune, right?
But if somebody told me when you have this much money available to spend, you can't say you're spending it stupidly because it's just more money. And there's just more money. And that's what this is really coming down.
Couldn't Rauner just run an ad saying, hey, I was 4 years governor. I didn't go to jail. That's got to be a win for an Illinois governor. That's unique in and of itself, isn't it?
It's actually one of his lines in his stump
speech. Oh, it probably is. Yes. Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune. So were you hopefully bitten by the Cardinals bug when you were down here going to school?
I was the token Cubs fan.
Oh, man.
Because at that time, the school was much smaller, and so I was the token Cubs fan.
Hey, Steve Chapman is much smarter than you. Is he still there at the Tribune, by the way?
Yes, he is.
He's a Cardinals fan.
I will readily see that he is much smarter, except when it comes to school.
Well, tell him I said he's been on the show. I'm a big fan of his. He's been on the show. So, hey, Rick, thank you so much. We may kind of, you know, get you on the air here as we get closer to this election every once in a while, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be on Camo Act.
Take care. Rick Pearson, Chicago Tribune, back with more. We're going to talk Cardinals. Tommy Ackerman coming up here.
Get ready for the Blues and Bruins tonight. Pre-game's gate 6:30. The puck drops at 7. Chris Kerber and Kelly Chase have all the action. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Blues. KMOX.
All right, Tom Ackerman down in Jupiter. Hang on, Tommy. We'll get to you in a second. I'm fielding a call from our own Kevin Killeen, and there's been some arguments made in the Eric Greitens case in court today, and Kevin's been covering that, and I believe he has an update. How are you?
Good. I'll give you the quick version. Governor Greitens got a disappointment here today. He was not in the courtroom, but four or five of his lawyers were. They wanted his trial sooner than later. They wanted it moved from from May 14th to April 3rd, but the judge said, no, we're not going to move it sooner. His lawyer said, we need to hurry this up because the trial could affect the outcome of a Missouri House investigation, which is ongoing, looking into these same matters. But the judge, Rex Burleson, said, I'm not going to let anything that's going on in the western part of the state, reference to Jeff City, influence what we do here. We've already moved it once, and we're going to stick with Greitens. We'll be in court for this invasion of privacy charge in St. Louis on May 14th.
All right, Kevin, I appreciate the update. We'll have more during Total Information PM. Let's go down to Jupiter. Tom Ackerman with us. After calling a game earlier today, we didn't have that one on the air. We will have a game on tomorrow. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great. How are you?
How's spring training?
Oh, it's excellent. It's winding down, but still great, nevertheless. The offense is cranked, man. They're ready to go. Matt Carpenter ripped a home run today, and then Marcell Ozuna hit a mammoth home run to center field today. Back-to-back home runs off Marlins pitcher Jumbo Diaz, and the Cardinals won the game 13-6.
Wow.
The offense looks like it's ready to roll. The leadoff hitter will be Dexter Fowler. He did not play today. Greg Garcia was there. But Tommy Pham, who struggled a little bit, he's just a shade under 200 right now, but he'll be fine. He's batting second. And then Carpenter, Ozuna. And you can kind of take your pick on 5, 6, 7. Right now, Mike Matheny's been writing in Jose Martinez, Yadier Molina, Paul DeJong, and then Jed Jerko, 8. That'll change when Colton Wong is in the lineup regularly at second base. Today it was Matt Carpenter. Wong will bat 8th. But you know, I like it. I mean, I think Jose Martinez in the lineup with his bat makes it even more appealing. And the Cardinals can hit. And then the rotation's been better. I think the five-man rotation's been set for a while. The bullpen is starting to take shape. This team is better, I think, than it was last year, especially because they play defense, they run bases better, they're not sloppy. They're just playing more clean baseball, the type of baseball we've become accustomed to over the years.
The last couple of years, last year obviously in particular, the errors, just the sloppiness, it just was so atypical for this team and just unacceptable.
No, it's unacceptable. And when the Cardinals take the field, you should feel like, as an opponent, that you better not beat yourself today, because they certainly won't. Like, you're going to have to outplay the Cardinals. When they take the field, for years it was, that team right there is going to play good ball. We better – they're not going to make a mistake. So we better go out there and play great to beat them. And it was a bit of an intimidation factor, to be quite honest. I looked back – I was, you know how you get caught up in YouTube sometime and you bounce from video to video. I looked up the Dusty Baker, Tony La Russa spat. Remember that in 03?
Absolutely.
Where they're barking
yeah.
at each other. It was awesome. In that telecast, I started watching it for a little bit, and the Cardinals turned like two double plays in two innings. And Steve Stone was the analyst, and he said, "I wish just once the Cardinals wouldn't turn a double play cleanly." You know, it was you could hear it in his voice. It was so frustrating. That's what the Cardinals need to get back to, that team that has the upper hand.
So let me ask you about something else here, separate but related. You got to play a soundbite from something. I know you'll know where I'm going here.
I know he's just a guy, but I really liked him. Who are you talking about?
Keith Hernandez.
Keith Hernandez?
Keith Hernandez!
Hello, Newman.
I hate Keith Hernandez. Hate him!
I despise him.
Now, I'm playing that because if I saw your tweet correctly, did you chat with Keith Hernandez and Tony La Russa this morning?
I did. Back to back. Talked to both of them on the phone. Now, Keith is down here in Florida, but both of us running around covering different teams. Keith is a broadcaster for the Mets. We decided to do it over the phone, but he is such a great guy. I'll see him Friday at Port St. Lucie, and what a thrill for a kid like me who's grown up a Cardinals fan and one of my first favorite players is Keith Hernandez. For the past couple of spring trainings, to be able to spend time with him and chat has been great. He actually has written a book, and we talk about that in the interview. The interview is really for the Cardinals Network to talk about his candidacy for the Hall of Fame in St. Louis. He's on the ballot for the Cardinals Hall of Fame.
That's right.
But it got into talking about his book, which is called I'm Keith Hernandez. And it's about the struggles that he had growing up until he finally figured out that he's good enough to be a big league player. So it's really interesting. And
Wait. What's the name of the book?
Who does this guy think he is?
I'm Keith Hernandez.
Hey, we had that. You can't put anything past my producer, Dave Klein, man. We're ready to go on the Keith Hernandez bites.
So that's the name of his book. So, yeah, somebody tweeted at me today. What did they say? I'll find it. Where I said that I talked to him, and the guy said I couldn't resist. And he dropped a line from Seinfeld.
Yeah, or there was a second spitter.
He said, next thing you know, you'll be driving into the airport.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, going back to the team, though, it's hard to get, and I've talked to a lot of fans. I mean, people, as you know, people are jacked up. We cannot wait for, I mean, next Friday is going to be great, next Thursday, but let's fast forward to 2 weeks from tomorrow in our opening day. But it's real difficult for those of us who are not seeing the team day in and day out. And you know, Tom, as much as we love to have the Cardinals on KMOX for spring training, people don't pay close enough attention. The lineups are different. You're trying to test things out. It's really tough to get a handle. And I think what I hear consistently from fans is they're not sure what this team is going to be about, and there's concern about the pitching. So let's go back to the pitching. What question marks are there right now in the rotation or even in that middle relief portion, which became a bit problematic last year?
I'd say the question mark in the rotation, first of all, would be, will these five men, all right-handers, be able to pitch well in August and September? Will they be able to withstand a full season? The one pitcher in the rotation that you could pretty much bank on will be a 200-inning guy is Carlos Martinez. The rest of them, you just don't know. Is Adam Wainwright capable of doing that all year? Will he be able to stay healthy? Michael Wacha, there's always the concern about his shoulder, although he looked like last year a different pitcher. And actually some have him as a dark horse Cy Young candidate, believe it or not, is someone that might be able to sneak in there if he can gobble up some wins. I don't think so, but I think that he can be very successful. Beyond that, Miles Michaelis is a huge question mark because he hasn't pitched in the major leagues in 3 years. He's been over at Japan, but the Cardinals think that with his big frame, he'll be able to withstand a full season. He throws about 98. He can keep the ball down, that he'll be able to get the ground ball outs they need. And that leaves you with the most impressive starter down here, and that's Luke Weaver. I think he's the one that I think could be the game changer for the rotation. He worked extremely hard in the offseason to get bigger. You know, he's kind of a smaller, slighter frame. Not this time. He's bigger. He's built himself a bigger foundation to be durable, and he's added a breaking ball to his arsenal, and his ERA is 0.68. in spring training.
Love to hear that.
He looks great, and I think that he's been the best of the five, in my opinion. So if the Cardinals come out of the gate with a good rotation, that's huge. They've got to be able to go deep into the games to save this bullpen. My concern about the bullpen is that they don't have a closer. Now, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to throw arms at the problem and have matchups and say, you know, sometimes the most crucial part of the game is the seventh or eighth, so we'll put our best reliever out at that point. That's fine. I'm more of a traditionalist. I like the ninth inning closer. I like knowing that the game is over when that closer comes out. And it's been a while, I think, since the Cardinals have actually had that.
Yeah,
I
mean, we
at one
had
point,
some...
Trevor Rosenthal was steaming along pretty well and set a Cardinals record for saves, but even he was
he
an adventure
too,
at times. Right. So
we'll see. That
to me is a problem. If there's one guy I would take right now, it's Tyler Lyons. He looks awesome. So if they went with a closer, he'd be the guy.
All right, Tom, I wanted to talk a little college hoops with you, but I ran out of time, so we'll do that when you get back here to St. Louis. You back next week?
Yep, games don't start till tomorrow. We got plenty of
time. All right, Tommy, thank you very much. We got Cardinals baseball on the air tomorrow. We have traffic coming up here in just a minute on KMOX Total Information PM. You'll hear more about the Cardinals from Chris Raby in the next hour.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, we do it every afternoon at this time, and it's sponsored by the Good Feet Store, supporting St. Louis Arches for 15 years, coming for your free test walk today. The Austin Bomber blew himself up this morning. The guy that has terrorized Austin over the past few weeks, he's dead. He's gone right now. Could be more people out there. This is Brian Manley, the Austin Police Chief. It's your audio cut of the day.
As members of the Austin Police Department SWAT team approached the vehicle, the suspect detonated a bomb inside the vehicle, knocking one of our SWAT officers back, and one of our SWAT officers fired at the suspect as well. We did have one officer who was injured when that bomb detonated as he approached the vehicle, suffering minor injuries. We don't know where this suspect has spent his last 24 hours, and therefore we still need to remain vigilant to ensure that no other packages or devices have been left through the community. The individual involved in this incident was a 24-year-old white male, and we're not going to give out any information regarding his residence. That's the one thing we don't have right now, is a motive behind this. We do not understand what motivated him to do what he did. We believe that this individual is responsible for all incidents that have taken place in Austin, starting on March 2nd, those that occurred since then as well. We don't know whether he was on his way to deliver another bomb. It is obvious that he had one with him, and that's the one that he detonated in the vehicle as we approached.
Well, you know, and I saw a picture of this kid. He's like a dweeby little white kid that looks relatively harmless. Who knows what the intentions were? Maybe we won't find out. Eventually, that's your audio cut of the day. We have another code word in the Spring Break Cash Escape coming up at 425 in the past. Also, Luke Bryan tickets to give away this afternoon. Total Information PM coming up next.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.